extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kalen Carr, Charlie Davies, David Goss. Oh, we are live. If you're watching live and if you're on demand, well, then we're on demand. We're talking Gold Cup, of course. The final is set. U.S., Mexico. I almost said Canada. I almost slipped. I wanted to say Canada. I didn't get to say Canada, but U.S., Mexico, Sunday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. We're going to talk through all that. Certainly, this insane match that just ended between the upstarts, John Herdman's Canada, and the old guard in Mexico. And, of course, the U.S. is 1-0 win against Qatar as well. And go through some big MLS news. Marc-Anthony Kay on the move. LAFC to the Rapids, some big signings around the league, and of course your mail. But oh my God, did anybody drink some Cuban rum? That's the truth serum. Doyle drinks a little bit of that, goes to Mexico, and all of a sudden, all you a-holes better watch out with your Matt Turner takes. How you guys feeling tonight?
Awesome. I mean, U.S.-Mexico is what we wanted, right? I mean, in a way, to get run that back. I mean, also Canada as well. That would have been amazing to see. And they ran away with, like, the story of the night for sure was Canada and just how impressive their performance was, undermanned and all that. So, yeah, the game laid on. I mean, you got to feel for Canada right now because they put so much into it. And the heartbreak of getting so close, but at the same time, you got to say they have so much to be proud about.
How much more spice? Nations League final or this Canada-Mexico game?
You can't come close to the U.S.-Mexico.
You don't think you can't? come on.
No, absolutely not. Are you
You're
kidding me?
You're counting Canada out a little bit here, Charlie. No, you're showing your bias just a tad.
Am I really, though? When you're talking about going down, coming back, going down, PKs, Christian Pulisic bangs it upper 90, they get a PK, Zach Steffen's out, then Ethan Horvath comes in, makes an incredible save.
I'm trying to say this was an incredible match that we just
incredible
witnessed.
Match, but so, don't overhype it.
Okay,
don't
overhype it. I'm gonna ignore Charlie because Charlie's killing the buzz. We had a really fun pregame show on Twitter Spaces. We'll do it again on Sunday before the final. You can jump on. We ask questions, fan questions. Anders was on hosting, and we talked about this game. And he was like, "What do you want to see? What do you need to happen?" And the two main things that stood out to me was I wanted Tejan to show he was one of the best players in this region, and to show that he could play in Europe, that he could play with Mexican, you know, the top Mexican players, all that. That done. That was an easy one that we got done. And Steven Eustáquio, I think over the course of this month and a half, has shown he is the big three for Canada. It's Alphonso Davies, Jonathan David, and Eustáquio. And he hadn't played really in a true CONCACAF game. He had played Haiti on the road with no fans, but that's different. And he was in it today. And it wasn't his best game of the tournament, but he was able to battle. He was able to live, you know, amongst all the chaos in that midfield. And Osorio and Marc-Anthony Kay stepped up next to him. I don't think there's anyone on this show right now who, if you asked them 4 hours ago and asked them now if Canada would qualify for a World Cup, would say the same thing. Whether you think they will now or not, you have to feel better about who this group is and how they can hang in this region than you did before tonight.
Yeah, the big thing for me was just also the personality of the team. Like going, just being undermanned, not having a lot of their best players, a lot of reasons to make excuses, playing in Houston against an all Mexico crowd, pretty much. I mean, it's like people were talking before the game about how many goals they would lose by. And the thing that I really liked, and the way it was similar in some ways to the Nations League, was, just that fight, you know, that it really came down to it. And it was more than that too, because Canada also sought to play. They didn't just sit back and look to counter. They actually played. But the fight amongst all those guys, I thought was they have definitely, you could see the spirit within the squad to take it. And, you know, they had plenty of reasons to be able to say, like, I don't know, let's pack it in or not. But even like some of the CONCACAF stuff, they seemed up for that and didn't seem, you know, I think who was Oso, who was going over and getting in Salcedo's ear before the penalty. I mean, they showed real savvy throughout the match as well, too, that helped them get through at least until the late stages of the match. And that's why it was just so heartbreaking at the end. I mean, Pizarro does well coming in off the bench to be able to kind of like find that moment to Herrera. But yeah, big ups to Canada.
So I'd say previously, a lot of the stuff that happens around penalty kicks is unnecessary and too much. But I don't know if everyone saw this, but there was someone who works as a sports psychologist, and his thesis was about penalty kicks and the pressure and how players react. He interviewed a ton of players, I think, that played in Euros, Copa America, World Cup over like 8 years. And he put together a ton of research that he put out during Euros. And one of the things it said is every second it takes for a player to shoot, there's a higher chance they're going to miss. So from the whistle to shooting, the longer a player waits, the higher percentage they're going to miss. But from the moment the penalty gets awarded to the shot as well. And you saw it in Qatar, the Qatar-US game. I think Kellen Acosta loves this part of the game and has purely become an expert. Kamal Miller as well. He needed to go from one side of the arc to the other to be in front of some imaginary Mexico player that slowed Salcedo's shot just a little bit and made him wait and think about it a little bit longer, and both of them missed. So here for the dark
arts. I don't know how you rotate PK takers. After Pineda did what he did on that first one and just doesn't – I don't know why you're rotating. It makes no sense. VAR showing itself in this match. We're going to see that more in World Cup qualifiers. That's an interesting nugget there. I think Kellen's got the PhD himself on the topic of PK, time wasting, getting in people's heads. He's pretty good at it. Let's just get to it. Let's get to it right now. Coming up today on the show, U.S. Qatar, Canada, Mexico, Mark Anthony Kay, Sebastian Drewsi. I said it all that. Real quick, go check out the Jim Curtin interview that Call-Up did. It's really, really good. He said it's his best in 7 or 8 years. We've done a couple with him during that time, but you know, I'll give them their props here. Well done. It was an awesome interview, and Doyle has some work on the side as well. Let's just jump in right now, and let's start with VAR in this game for Canada. I thought both the penalties were legit. I thought at the end of the game, I had so much regret for Canada because both of them were completely unnecessary moments that would have changed the game. Ache wouldn't have been winning the game. He would have been potentially tying the game. You may never have gotten to that point. And those are the little margins, I think, that Canada's going to have to, I don't know, iron out a little bit before they hit World Cup qualifying. You gave us the Tejan Buchanan spiel there, Dave. But, Charlie, I want to go to you on him, man. I mean, this is what you've been crowing about for years at this point, even maybe we didn't want to hear it. And I'll admit to not seeing this at the beginning of your campaign. What's the price tag now, man? What's Bruce Arena looking at? Can he keep him?
Well, the answer is yes, because the Revolution want to win MLS Cup. This is their best opportunity to win MLS Cup right now. And if you sell a Matt Turner, if you sell a Tejan Buchanan before this season ends, you are taking a big hit and you are basically throwing that opportunity out the window. So if they do sell Tejan or Matt Turner at some point this summer, you know it's going to be after January where they can depart. There's no way they're going to allow them to leave when this team has a real shot at winning MLS Cup. And Tejan is special. And I don't think you sell him for anything less than $8 million. $8 million is the minimum. And his price tag is going to continue to rise because he's showing he's versatile. He can play right back, right wing back, right. He's an attacking player, but he can play all over the place because he has that mentality that he's going to do whatever it takes to win on the pitch. And that's what I've noticed since day one when I watched him. I said, okay, this kid has something special. One, just the confidence to beat players on the dribble, 1v1. He's very quick and strong, but it's more so his mentality. He plays with that chip on his shoulder. It's almost like a little bit like a Clint Dempsey, always trying to prove himself. He never thinks he's made it. He's never happy with himself. He's always trying to go out there to say, hey, I'm going to win. I'm going to beat you. And I'm better than you. And I love that. I love that attitude. So this is a special player. And I love to see him, you know, now fully blossoming in front of our eyes.
How does he change Canada, Dave? because it wasn't this before this tournament. This is his coming out party, at least on the Canada side. He wasn't in the youth national teams. He wasn't this big prospect. He wasn't Alphonso Davies. He wasn't Jonathan David. But now he's, I'm not saying he's going to approach their level, but he's knocking on the door. Like, he's a game winner in this region.
Yeah, and while he wasn't part of the youth national teams, you got to give Canada credit because the way they built the Olympic team around him, which struggled, gave him that first taste of what it means to have the team on his shoulders at the CONCACAF level. And then when you just look at what it means for this tournament, is it's not all on Alphonso Davies anymore. Like, this, look what just happened. Alphonso Davies as a teenager was a Golden Boot winner and Canada got to a quarterfinal. Now he doesn't even come to a tournament. And Tejon Buchanan and other pieces are able to get them all the way to a semifinal where they probably deserve to make it even further. So this is a depth that Canada has never seen before. It's pieces that John Herdman can use in different ways. It felt like 6-7 weeks ago, okay, he had figured out the five-man back line, how Davies works as, you know, that wing back that can kind of go wherever he wants, Laren off of him. But every team in World Cup qualifying would kind of know what they were going to see because that's all it was. Now, how does he use Tejon? When does he use Tejon? You know, now we talked about these three-game windows. Is it Fonzie for the first game, Tejon at home game two, and then Fonzie on the road? Is it both of them?
You starting them every game.
All right,
you can't.
Charlie, chill for a second. Chill for a second. You're going to start both of them at wing back. You're going to go on the road in CONCACAF and start both of them at wing back.
Why would you have to start either of them at wing back if you had to? You could, one, they could. They're both starters every game. Mm-hmm. There's not a question. Tejon could play right wing back. He can also play where Osorio is playing in that left wing back spot, inverted winger, however you want to call it. Alphonso can play there because he was an attacking player before he went over to Bayern Munich. And in CONCACAF especially, he's going to be dynamic as an attacker where you don't need him to defend. And you also know he's going to track back anyways because that's just in his nature. So you play both of them every match. You may have to tinker depending on who you're playing because maybe their starting position's a little bit further back versus when you know you're going to be on the ball more, you're going to have more opportunities, then you can play him higher up the field. But both of them, you find a way. If you're Coach Herdman, you play your best 11, and that would mean starting both of those players.
And
in the course
of
this match, he played a bunch of different positions too. He played on the right. He switched over to the left-hand side where he got his goal. I think by the end, he was playing almost as like a second striker up top when they were kind of dropping in and doing a lot of defending, but needing someone to kind of get out and hit on the break a bit. But that's the thing about him is when I watched him, I think, you know, at the beginning of his MLS coming out party was near the end of last season for those unlike Charlie that had been tracking him even before that. But you saw him playing more that wing back role. And you saw with the amount of space that he was able to cover with a solid head of steam, how good he could be kind of contributing to the attack. But then you're like, oh, maybe that's a better spot for him because he might not have that sort of killer instinct or finishing ability closer to the goal to be a true winger. And then you watch more and more and you're like, well, actually, he's got that. I mean, he's doing double step overs, finishing to the back post. So it's just like, it does feel like you're watching him continue to grow. I think they said that in the broadcast tonight too, where he's still getting better, which is why I think if you're New England, you can afford a little bit of time to maybe not just try and take the money now while you can, because maybe you feel like it's fool's gold or he's going to have a dip in form. It seems like he's actually still growing in his game. So, and for every club, I said this last time, that every club is different. So while Dallas or Philly might make more sense to sell early for a club like New England that hasn't won MLS Cup, that's got to be priority number one. And then you still want to do right by the player. You still want to have them go on. That's good for the club as well, too, financially and as far as their prestige goes and bringing more players along. But he's also not a homegrown player. So he's not like a kid that came up through the academy or anything like that. They did a good job finding him and give him a platform. But I feel like doing that on the stage that happened tonight is definitely going to make that price tag, whenever it happens, go up.
Can we throw another shout out to the draft pick, Alistair Johnston? What a year he's had. I mean, he's a lockdown starter, whether it's right center back or right wing back for them. And that versatility, one, covering for Tejon to allow him to get into the attack and do what he does, or Richie when it's swapped, and then his versatility to step in and out. And I thought he was good again today. and Daniel Henry struggled. He has struggled the last three games he's played for Canada. Mm-hmm. So they were missing Steven Vitoria. And yeah, Alistair Johnson's performance didn't drop. Neither did Kamal Miller's, who maybe this was his best game. And this is the third straight game we've said that about him. So huge performance on the back line, a bunch of super draft picks, still getting it done for this Canadian team. And they kind of are starting to build that platform where we talked about the attackers. We knew they could score goals. Then you see Kay. Then you see Osorio. Eustaquio comes into the team. Atiba. Okay, the midfield's there. The back line has been the question mark. And I think it's less so coming out of this tournament.
To a semifinal, to the brink of a final, almost just seconds, perhaps a few calls, a few inches, a decision or two away from knocking off Mexico and perhaps making history. Well, they wanted to be there. They won't be, but World Cup qualifying is coming. They didn't have Alphonso Davies. They didn't have Jonathan David. Kyle Larin left this tournament. No Ayo Akinola. He got hurt. Cavallini's out in this game. I mean, you go through the players that they didn't have but likely will, and you know, look, fate is a funny thing. We don't know what's going to happen come September and beyond. This team's going to be there. Before we get to the U.S., my last question, because Simon Borg put it out there on Twitter the other day. U.S. and Mexico, they're the top two. We know that. Who's the third best team? Is it Canada? Have they taken that step? Have they pushed Honduras or Costa Rica or, you know, whoever it is that's Jamaica maybe contending for that title out? Is it them?
I can't say that yet. One thing about CONCACAF is it's what you do in this region. It's not about what clubs you play for. It's not about the trophies you win in Europe. It's not about what you've done other places or even how you do in a world. Like, everything about this region is unique and a challenge. And Canada, this was a great tournament, but we need to see in World Cup qualifying, we need to see them go to San Pedro Sula. We need them to go to San Jose, Costa Rica, and get results and show that they can play at that level and that they've surpassed some of those teams, because none of those teams are giving you space, right? Honduras could roll out, you know, Carlos Pavon and Amado Guevara, and they'll still battle you tomorrow. That's just the nature of this region. So Canada's not there yet, but I feel better about everything for this national team than I did 12 hours ago and a month ago.
And they do too. That's the thing. This tournament was really important for their mentality and their belief. And now they know, hey, we took Mexico to the brink. And technically, to them, Mexico are still the top dog in CONCACAF. So if they can compete. And the funny thing is, Herdman said, this is the first like real quality opponent that we're facing. I also knew what he was doing there. I said, oh, okay, a little shot at the U.S. there. The first real test that we have of a quality opponent. I go, okay. But I do appreciate the Canadian national team and what they bring. And it's a lot of youthful and experience, but they gained it just like the U.S. did in Nations League and in this tournament. There's a lot of players, a lot of new players coming into the fold now, feeling like they can compete at this level and get it done. And so for this Canadian national team, I'm excited to watch them play. They have a lot, like you watch Tejan, Jonathan David, Alphonso Davies. They have these playmakers that can change a game at any moment. So I'm really interested to see what it looks like when they go to San Jose and they play Costa Rica, a full strength Costa Rican side, and they go to San Pedro Sula, play a Honduras for a World Cup qualifier. Then we really see what they're made of.
They're fun
also,
too.
Talent, I think Jamaica is the other part of that conversation.
Yeah.
You talk about Canada missing players. Mikel Antonio in form might be the most dominant, you know, or definitely forward, but maybe player in this region. He wasn't at this tournament. Leon Bailey didn't play against the U.S. So that's the other one that would stand out in that convo alongside the traditional powers.
Yeah, I'm anti-third place games. Hate them. Don't like them. They're worthless. But I'll watch this Canada-Qatar game, all right? I'm going to watch that. I want to see them just a little bit more. The most fun team in the tournament. But adios. The U.S. on to their 12th Gold Cup final. You know we're feeling Canada when we do like 20 minutes before we even get to the U.S. Knocking off Qatar 1-0. It was not a vintage performance. You're going to XG. Qatar 2. U.S. 0.86. But Matt Turner's out here. He's the eraser. He's not having it. This was the performance we had been waiting for from Matt Turner. It's the PK disrupting performance we know and expect from Kellen Acosta. It's Jassy Zardes coming up big at the end, just as you know, his haters might not like to see, but the rest of us basically expect at this point. What's your one word? Kalen, what's your one word for this U.S. performance on their way to a final with whatever, the B, C, it doesn't matter team, a bunch of guys that are hungry and trying to earn a spot on those World Cup qualifying rosters?
Why do you always come to me first on the one words? One word. I'm still thinking of Turner because it's just, to me, he was like the big standout. And when you look throughout the tournament as well, I think they've only given up one goal throughout. And yeah, the front line was not connecting. It didn't seem to work very well. DK, another sort of disappointing match. Jossie did a good job coming in, as did all the subs that really gave the team some life and energy and got the team moving forward. But the back line was really strong, except for maybe even actually, I can't even say that today, even though they were able to keep a zero. They did give up a number of opportunities, but it was Turner that whenever they ran into a couple opportunities, I mean, he kept us in us that first half. And then obviously, of course, with the penalty, I mean, didn't save it, but, yeah, maybe him and Acosta can share the credit
he,
for that.
Hold one. On. He didn't save it.
No, but he held his ground.
But afterwards, he literally said before this penalty, I tried to get in his head. I've been watching his penalties. I let him know that he mimicked his run up as he was walking back to the goal. Just to try to mess with the guy a little bit.
I like that.
He knew his run up so well that he
and we've seen Turner on penalties too. So he, if they've done their homework on him, they'll have known how good he can be on those. But I mean, the save, the one where it kind of he gets that fingertip across, it was just ridiculous to be able to get on that one, and then even preventing the own goal as well. So look, the team got the result, had to sort of fight for it a little bit in the end, but I really think the substitutes made a big difference coming into the match. Jossie will get the headlines, but I also thought Roldan did well, and Giochini as well as Cannon, and pretty much to a man, the substitutions panned out for Berhalter tonight.
I had resiliency because they weathered a storm, man. That first half, Qatar is knocking down the door. They were the better team. And I think those, sort of by
possession
far.
Possession number, right? 58%, yeah. But we got outshot 17-6.
Yeah, I mean, the whole first half, it's just a horseshoe, man.
They were shooting
just,
from everywhere.
Fair. That's fair. That's fair. Okay, continue. Sorry, Weeby. They're shooting
from their own corners.
No, it was just resiliency. I mean, essentially, they got resiliency. To the PK. They got to the PK, and once that went over, the whole mood seemed to change. And Charlie Bohm had the quote from the Qataris afterwards saying that we were just exhausted. After that, to a man, we just didn't have it in us anymore. And that's where the U.S. sort of flipped that switch. And Greg and his subs, when he tightened the bolt, right? And that's when I think the momentum really changed. So it's that resiliency to sort of last. And you know, you hope in World Cup qualifying, it's the same story. And I know we keep bringing it back to that, but that's what you're thinking towards every time. And that's what I was thinking in this game. You don't play your best. You get dominated for large portions of the first hour, and you still win. The points, the results are ultimately what matters. I know it's not a CONCACAF opponent, but these are the Asian champions. Like, this is a team that, if they're not automatically qualified, are probably going to make the World Cup out of their confederation, which is not easy. So I think there's a lot to be proud of in this game. And I think if you're Greg Berhalter, you look at that first hour as sort of the price you pay for playing the team that you have. You've given young guys opportunities who, by and large, if you were to say right now, are they ready for a semifinal before the tournament started? We probably would have said no across the board on a lot of guys. And now we know that they are, even if the performance wasn't at an A-plus level, they are. And then you have old reliable at the end, man, Jossie. Greg said if it was a qualifier, he would have started him. Well, and I get that. He comes in, he changes the game. His movement is just, at this point, clearly better than Daryl's, and that's okay. Daryl's still, he's still figuring it out. He's a year into his pro career. And then he's in the right place at the right time. Resiliency for me is mine. Dave, do you have one?
I thought exciting. And not exciting the way the U.S. played. I think won the game, right? The energy, the atmosphere in Austin at Q2 Stadium, fans back in the stadium. Like, it felt like a big U.S. game. It felt like a semifinal, a World Cup qualifier, whatever it was. And then I think to all the things you said, to watch them win that. Like, these are young guys. These are guys who are learning. These are a lot of players that we hope will have bright futures. So to watch them get through all of that and make it to a final against Mexico, I think all of that's exciting, even if the soccer wasn't as pure as we want it to be. And it hasn't really been over the last year. But I don't know, man. If Greg walks out with two trophies and goes into World Cup qualifying this summer and, like, didn't even mean to win the second one, that's not a bad way for it to go. after the year or two he's had of just not having the team, not being able to play, all the question marks, all the young players he's trying to bring through. That would be pretty wild as for that to be the way all this ends.
You've had some time with the thesaurus here, Charlie. Give me a good word, man. You got a good one?
Execution. Job finished. Literally, the goal was to get to a final with this group. They got to the final, and they're playing against Mexico, who are going to be the favorites. And so when you look at the team that he's put together, I mean, there's not one star. Their star is the goalkeeper. That's who's been really the stars, Matt Turner. Jossie Zardes has come in and fulfilled the role because DK, if anything, has had his stock drop in this tournament. And it's not because of the shoulder injury in this match in particular, but I would say over the course of the tournament, you've seen a lot of his deficiencies where he has to improve. And that's why, you know, he hasn't been, you know, sold yet, because his first touch, it still needs to improve drastically. His ability to take players on the dribble and just being able to maneuver around the box with that first touch, the second touch to set up the shot, needs to improve drastically. His involvement in the game. And so I think as that evolves, and that's why Greg Berhalter was giving him those chances, because no one else has stepped up. So why not continue to try and allow him to develop as a starter with the U.S. men's national team? Because there hasn't been a striker to say, hey, this is my spot, I'm going to keep it. Now, Jossie Zardes, he owns that spot now because of performance and because he's consistent and he has that relationship with Greg Berhalter. He knows what he's going to get out of him. So I'd say from that standpoint, you knew what you were going to get. There's a lot of youngsters who are learning on the fly, getting that experience, and not quite up to that level yet of the A team. They're trying to get their shot, get their foot in the door for those World Cup qualifiers. But this is a team that I think got to a final, mission complete, and now you're going to play against Mexico and see what kind of test you can give them. I think they're going to be uplifted seeing what Canada did tonight versus them, and that really gives them a shot heading into the final. And, you know, Tata Martino, maybe he changes things up. Maybe, you know, that Nations League final messed him up, the psyche when he's competing against the U.S. men's national team. I don't know. Let's go.
There's no way you could say Mexico's coming in on confidence. This has been one of the worst Gold Cups they've had, and they still made a final. That's the quality we're talking about. But you drew Trinidad and Tobago. They've struggled to score goals in clear ways. There isn't defined ways this team knows how to attack. I mean, just look at the penalty kicks today. You got Orbelin Pineda, who's now 25, but considered, you know, one of the younger players on this group. Why isn't Aceh taking that? Where's Tecatito? And then Carlos Salcedo takes the second one. All of that to me showed you got a group that's confused where they are. There isn't a clear identity either in the soccer or in the culture. But taking that aside and going back to what Charlie was saying, and like job done and the way they did it, you got DK and Busio and Vines and Shaq Moore, all of them, you got them all this experience. And maybe DK's not ready this year. Maybe he's not ready next year. Whatever it is, I believe long term he will be, and this will be good experience for him, and you still made the final. Like, all of that is huge for Greg to be able to get what he sort of wanted out of this tournament and still be facing Mexico and Las Vegas.
Can I take this wider? What is, and I'm going to throw it to you, Kalen, put you on the spot here. What is the number 9 depth chart for you right now? Yours, personally. Not necessarily what Greg Berhalter is going to do, but World Cup qualifying, this is sort of the boop, 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 how you take it down.
I would go Jossie, Sargent, and then DK. Unless somebody, I think that's the way I see it now. And I have to say I was disappointed because I really felt like DK had a little bit more, was more ready than what we've seen so far. Just based on, you know, the momentum that he had going, coming from the championship. And I just felt like that was maybe the moment sort of slipped away from him, or he wasn't able to carry it forward. Or maybe to Charlie's point is he wasn't quite ready. And I thought he was a little further along. And I thought that this Gold Cup in particular against, you know, against some good opponents, but maybe not. He hasn't had to go against Mexico yet. I know he's had some tough matches, but I felt like this would be a good platform for him to really take that number nine position and carry that forward into World Cup qualifiers. But I just don't think he, I think he's still got it. He's still in the picture and in the mix. But I think right now, Jossie is the guy that, as you, and not just based on tonight, but like, as it was always like, can one of these young guys step up and take their chance to take this spot from him? Because we kind of know what he's going to be, and it's solid and it's good and it's consistent. But it's not maybe the top next level that maybe U.S. men's national team fans have gotten a peek at with these young emerging talents like Reyna or Christian or Weston or these other, you know, Dest, all these guys. But you know what? I feel like Jossie can do the business, and he proved it tonight, because it's like, if you understand that you get those good wing play around it, and you saw it right there with Giacchini and that little cutback, you can bank that Jossie's going to be in the right position, understanding where to be in the box to be able to get the tap in, and he puts his shots always on frame. So that's the way I see the number nine position. Maybe like some other people hoping that one of the young players would take their opportunities. But to this point, they haven't yet. It doesn't mean that they won't in the future or won't need to be counted upon during World Cup qualifiers at all. I think they both will have a big role to play. But right now, I'd say this is Jossie's spot.
I think Zarda said after this, quote, "One thing I never do, I never question the coach's decision. They're the ones that do all the research on, and, you know, game methodology, et cetera, et cetera." And I could only help but think back to when he said, "I'm not a right back." There was but one decision that Jossie Zarda didn't respect.
Everybody's got to draw the line somewhere. Yeah. But I give him, people have talked a lot about that, right? And it hinted at like all the backlash that he's faced or whatever. And you got to give him a ton of credit, because he really has. I mean, that was sort of emblematic of even within his own organization or within a team being kind of fallen out of favor and, you know, finding form actually through going to Columbus and getting into a system that suited him, where he wasn't being asked to do too much, or he didn't need to maybe really create on his own. It was more just about being a part of a system, holding up the ball, getting in behind, making good runs in the box, and finishing your chances. And that's what we've seen him do consistently. And to his credit, he's put his head down, shut out the noise through all the doubters. Look, you know, it doesn't, I also understand on the other side, like I just made the point, you're hoping for more competition at every position. We're seeing that now in the goalkeeper position with, you know, we've got three really good options now. We want more of that with outside backs. We're seeing that with center backs, which is still being decided. You want Acosta is now coming in, and Legette, and these guys that are, I think, proving throughout this tournament that they can play a big role with the first team. I was just hoping to see a little bit more of that from the number nine position, which I think is still a position where we're lacking a little bit of readiness in our depth.
Here's a question for you, man. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying the two things that stuck out to me about Darryl before move over, and Charlie mentioned it. One was his activity, especially in a game like this. When Qatar got numbers forward, he wasn't an outlet. And he wasn't chasing balls into the channel. And the other, which I was a little surprised by, but, you know, you guys would know better than me, at this gulf and change in quality, he wasn't able to hold defenders off when he was in position. He had a few times where he's played through the way he wanted to. And whether it's the speed, the strength, or maybe just his reading of the moment, he kind of allowed the defenders to get through him and get to the other side of the ball. And that's not something I thought he would struggle with.
Yeah, I agree.
You got to have a floor. Oh, the only thing I'll add is, and Chuck, you can chime in too, because, you know, we've got a pretty good U.S. number nine here. But I would just say, like, if you're not having your best day as far as your footwork goes, or you're not feeling on, or your timing is a little bit off, like, you have to at least know that you're going to be a nuisance, or the floor has to be that you're going to occupy space, you're going to stretch the field, you're getting behind. If you miss a couple chances, okay, fine, maybe you don't have your touch right or whatever, but you're going to draw fouls, you're going to be busy. And that was the part where I was saying, where I still feel like he can be so useful, and his his skill set can be so useful to the U.S., because it's not always going to be a let's pass it all the way through the field and create these beautiful patterns and get there. Like, against some teams, we're going to have to play a little bit more direct. I think at times we've been a little too reticent to play direct throughout the Gold Cup. And that's where I would have liked to see just that, maybe a little bit just of like getting it up to him and him making a run that would demand the pass. We saw it just a couple times, and it caused problems over the last two matches.
We saw the one with Hoppy really not enough that he got called off on, where he waved his hand for it and his touch was off, or he wasn't there, but it was a dangerous moment.
Exactly.
Charlie, here's the question for you. World Cup qualifier tomorrow. Who are you starting in goal? Matt Turner, Zach Steffen, Ethan Horvath.
If it's
this is a hard one.
Yeah, no. If it's not that hard actually. If you're telling me tomorrow, I'm going with the keeper who's playing right now in form, and that's Matt Turner. If it's tomorrow, I'm going with Matt Turner because he's had a full now 16 games in Major League Soccer. He's had a full Gold Cup. The guy's on fire. He's playing unreal, and he's done it for a while now. But he's so in form and healthy and fit, you don't have to worry about it, that he has to be your starter now. He's been so consistent. You know, Zach Steffen, when he's fit and he's on his game, there's a reason why he's at Manchester City. Yeah, he's not playing all the time, but he still gets FA Cups. He's still seeing the most, you know, incredible, talented players in training every day. But you need reps. He's not getting it right now, and he had to deal with an injury. So in that case, you can't just have him be cold and start a World Cup qualifier. You bring him into camp, but Matt Turner, he's got the keys right now. He's got the keys.
Charlie, tomorrow, September, October, November, January, yeah. December, March, this situation might not be different than it is right now in terms of playing time for your club team.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and that's the national team. You don't just go based on merit. You go where who's in form, who's fit, who's getting a good opportunity. You know, there are occasions where if Christian Pulisic isn't playing at Chelsea, he's still going to start with the national team. But in other positions, especially in the goalkeeper position, you have to start with the player who's getting minutes, who's playing, who's hot, who's been consistent. Now, if there was no other keepers who were actually coming up with these big time saves and showing that they're a supreme shot stopper, then Zach Steffen's easily going to slide in as the number one. But right now, if there's ever an opportunity to kind of surpass someone who's at a major club and has done all this, you know, incredible work behind him, but is not currently fit, it's Matt Turner. And he's earned it. He's played himself into the number one position. And I firmly believe that, you know, this is a national team that has now depth and talent up the wazoo. Number nine, in the number nine position, we haven't had someone solidify that yet. Now, what I have liked to see from Josh Sargent this preseason is he's playing as a striker. He's scoring. And that gives me confidence that he's going to be in his position for the whole season. He's not going to be moved around to right midfield, left midfield, and, you know, really focused on defending to survive relegation. But, you know, for me, Jossie would get the start right now, because he's like a grown man. He's playing like a man with a ton of experience and not so much in that role of I still got to develop. So he would get the start for me right now in CONCACAF. That's not to say in 2022 in the World Cup that he's your starting striker, but right now when you need to get results, you know you can depend on him. He's going to be consistent.
Leave it to a number nine to start a goalkeeping conversation and bring it right back to the forward position.
But hey, I had to.
But it is interesting the connection there of the challenge for Greg in the two spots, right? Matt Turner is in form and is fighting to earn that spot, where on the flip side, as Kalen said, no one has stepped in at the forward position. So you have two arguments in different ways. One is, well, Zach Steffen, he's the veteran. He's got the experience and he plays at Man City for Pep Guardiola, who's pretty good at what he does. And then you've got Matt Turner, who's playing in incredible form, and Horvath. I don't even know how to fit him into this whole thing, but no one's playing like a Matt Turner at number nine to like take that spot. And so Zardes continues to earn it. And so there are two different challenges for Greg to deal with.
It's lovely challenges, I'll tell you that. If you're a coach, I spoke to Greg about this, when you have so many talented young players who, for the most part, don't have a ton of international experience, but they are performing at their clubs, and you look at the depth chart and you're like, look at the right back spot. You got like seven real legit options. Seven. And then you go down the line, okay, center back's a little bit thin, but now I think you saw – Miles Robinson, I think, has stepped up, has made huge leaps and bounds, and now he's really put himself in the conversation of, you know, a potential starting center back for the U.S. men's national team. When you're talking about World Cup qualifiers, Sam Vines, another player, needs to get a little bit stronger, but I think has improved in my mind as a left back as an option. I didn't think he would be there yet. I think it'd still take him some time, but now I saw a little bit more from him in the tactical awareness, you know, getting up and down, being a little bit more consistent, but still that strength needs to come up, because when you're starting to play some of these real hungry CONCACAF attackers, you're going to need to eat those
Wheaties. That's why I'm excited for Mexico, really, because I mean, we talk about these steps in development, and we're still going to learn so much more in this final, and we saw how much the U.S. team grew in the Nations League final against Mexico last time. And when you play against the best, like how it raises your game or challenges you or exposes you at times. And that's where I'm like, oh man, you look at those Mexico wingers and you're saying, okay, Shaq Moore and Vines, right? It's been nice. We've had the ball a lot of the time. You've had to worry about some counterattacks, but this is going to be a little bit different going against Mexico. And so you get a little bit more information. I know we're probably going to jump into that matchup a little bit more. I don't mean to jump the gun.
Oh, you're just hosting this. I was about to take us there. So okay. I'm just sitting back in the chat, just enjoying.
But I do think there'll be some changes to the side, because exactly to your point earlier, Weeby, when Greg talked about trusting the young players, wanting to let them learn, wanting to let them grow. But also, if you haven't taken your opportunity by now, it's time to make some changes. That's where I think we see Zardes come in up top. And I think probably Christian Roldan comes in for Busio as well. I would guess those would be at least two changes there that I see from before. Just because I don't know if either guy, although they have so much talent, I just don't know if either of them have really have maybe that experience or are ready for that final. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he sticks with them and goes with them still. But I just think of when I think of Christian Roldan, like that's a guy I want in a final, and a guy that has more experience. And when he came on, he played well. He looked up for it. And I feel like being around that middle and midfield is such an important position, defensively even, to really get in and break plays up. And then just having that savvy and experience playing in finals is a little different. So I think those two changes for sure. But I do think Mexico will be big favorites, and I think they will, despite them not having their best performances or maybe coming in and the U.S. feeling a lot better in a way than coming off their last match. I think they're going to smell a little bit of blood in the water and think that this U.S. team is not the same U.S. team that they played in the Nations League final, and that there are weaknesses. You look at the chances, even when you watch the film of Qatar today and the chances that we conceded, some of the giveaways that we gave away that created opportunities, and then the way that Matt Turner had to kind of bail us out at times to keep us even in the match leading into the second half. I think Mexico will look at that and say, I think this is a final where we can get some revenge.
Dave, is it convenient narrative building on our part, U.S. men's national team fans and Twitter's part, to be like, Charlie said, all good, mission accomplished. Like, this is gravy. No worries. Mexico, it's on you. Don't get fired, Tata. You know, like, is that convenient? Or is that just what's up?
I think that's the reality. The U.S. had to win a trophy this summer. They already did, like a month and a half ago. So this whole tournament was, well, what can you get out of it? What's the value of it? But okay, we need to learn how to win now was done in Denver with Charlie running around with people up in the upper deck, jumping off stands and whatever.
Thank you, like on the field.
That already happened. That's what that was. That was Reyna, Pulisic, Sargent, Tyler, Weston. Can you guys be winners for the U.S. men's national team? Can you lead this team without, you know, those veteran presence that we've had in the past? And they proved that. So this was about everything we've talked about. And no one's ever going to tell this group that's stepping on a field with Mexico that you can give anything but your best and that you don't expect to win. Because that's always been the expectation. You remember those years where we'd play friendlies and it would be a CB, you know, Jimmy Conrad gets a header goal and Landon scoring off of referees. And there'd be these games that we thought maybe the U.S. wouldn't be in, and we'd always win them or we'd fight with them. And that's part of building the culture back up of the U.S. men's national team. So there's no expectation there. But if we said it 4 weeks ago, it's not convenient to now say it again, right? Like, we have ETR episodes of us saying this isn't about winning. The only focus is not winning. If they don't win, it's not a failure. Like, we can't go through all of that. Now get to this point and say, oh, no, now they have to win. But you're in a final. You've got a job to do, and there should be a level of expectation with these players.
How do you think Greg will set it up, Charlie? Give me a eye into the future. Sunday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1.
I think he makes more than two changes. I think Zardes starts up top in that lone striker position. I think Ariola comes off. I think they bring on either Eric Williamson or Roldan. I would assume they're going to bring on an Eric Williamson. You keep Matthew Hoppe on there as more of an attacker, and then you bring on Roldan for Abusio. Acosta and Legette stay in the midfield. Reggie Cannon starts right back. Sands, Robinson, Vines, Turner. I think that's who you go with. You need a little bit more now, guys, with that grit, the mentality.
So
players who are gonna look to come in and really, you know, kind of come in with strong tackles, get on the ball, trying to expose them on the counter every now and then with Jossy Zardes, who will stretch the back line. You saw a lot of positive things from Canada, but the thing that Canada has that the U.S. doesn't have is Tejan Buchanan. So that's a player who can create chances by himself on the dribble with pace, and he's a goal threat as well. The U.S. does not have that in their roster right now.
So, Charlie, I agree with you, but don't you think all those things you just described in Greg Berhalter's head are Paul Ariola? Like, he's coming off an injury.
No.
It's been tough.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. all those things you described, those are normally when he uses Paul.
I agree with you in that sense, because he's very predictable in the way he plays. But if you watched him tonight, it is you didn't get anything out of him. He works hard, but you need a little bit more than that when you're playing against Mexico. It can't be someone who's just going to work hard. There's got to be a little bit more. And I think you get more of a dynamic player like Eric Williamson, who can get on the ball and relieve pressure. But also, when you see him with Diego Chara, yes, there's the back and forth with him. He can cover for Diego when Diego wants to go on those mazy runs. I think you get more with him because he's going to be that inverted winger who's going to come in and help the midfield, but he can also get on the attack and create something. So from that standpoint, Paul Ariola is maybe a great option coming off the bench, someone who's going to be north and south and get in behind and be very direct. I think you stick with Joachini coming off the bench. I think he's also shown that, you know, you could get something out of him. There's something there. He's still developing. He's young, but this is a player that I think also has a bright future and could be a game changer off the bench.
Does the U.S. win? Then we'll move on. We got a lot to talk about. Does the U.S. win?
I'm going to say yes.
Is that a hopeful yes? That was sort of like a, I'm going to say yes. It wasn't like, it's yes. It's 100% yes for me. It was like, you eased into it. You know, it's like the kid who gets convinced to get on the water slide.
And they're like, that was,
I'm going to go down.
That was epic, guys. You said, this is exactly what went through your mind. He said, I'm going to say, everyone's going to come after me and hate me if I say, but, okay, yeah, they're going to win. Yeah, sure.
Listen,
my mind. One, my if, mind I said anything, tells me.
If I said anything 100%, I'd be a fool, Andrew Wiebe. Yeah. If you say anything 100%, you're out of your mind.
You'd be a charlatan. You would. But you would.
I feel similar to how I felt for Canada going into the Mexico game. Maybe not as strong, but stronger in other places. I just think on both sides, you're looking at a Mexico team, as I said, that I just don't think is in a high level of form, doesn't have a ton of confidence. And when you look at this matchup, while the U.S. was pulled apart at times by Qatar, which is a totally different attacking unit than what you're looking at with Mexico, where they're fluid, they have ideas of how they want to play, they're a cohesive unit. Mexico has individual talent, but they don't really seem to fit together right now. You're looking at a U.S. team that's given up one goal all tournament. So I don't think this is a team – I don't think this is a game the U.S. is going to have to chase. And I think it kind of goes into the way they want to play and they have played. Now you look at Zardes being able to hold up the ball and launch people on the counterattack. If Mexico steps higher, does that give room for Matthew Hoppe to run into or any of the other players that Kalen and Charlie talked about coming into this game? I mean, how good has Roldan been in transition for Seattle over the course of this year? How good is Williamson if it's him? So I think this kind of fits into the U.S. game plan, maybe even more than Qatar does. And then I just see the pressure on this Mexico team. And I see it on Tata as well. And you hear it in what he's saying and how he talks about it and how he's distanced from the Olympic team and what he's focused on and what he's doing. I just think you go into a game where there's zero pressure, zero expectation on this U.S. team with all the energy and the excitement of playing in this new stadium in front of the crowd and all these things. And it's the opposite experience for Mexico. And I see a really good opportunity for the U.S. to squeak one out. So now I sound more convincing. That's what you guys.
I can't say that there's no pressure, though, because anytime it's U.S.-Mexico, there's pressure. Like, I understand. My mind tells me that Mexico are definitely the favorites in this one. And I think if there is a path forward for the U.S., it's going to have to be the exact same way that they've been doing it, which is not conceding goals and having some. I think it might take some more like heroics in goal. It might take some more. I think we probably need to get a little more out of our set pieces. We haven't really gotten enough out of those throughout the play. And then following a little bit of Canada's lead, which was to referencing the Nations League performance, which is, even if it's not pretty, to find a way to fight through it and gut out however you can, which is, I think we'll go into the personnel choices you make. I think it will be Reggie Cannon is a guy I'd like to see come in, but it might be hard to change the back four just considering they haven't given up much. Although Shaq Moore did get beat a couple times, but I think he's by and large had an excellent tournament. It's going to take some of what Canada had. And the other thing that they had, which Charlie rightly points out, is Tejan Buchanan. But we don't have that. But being able to find ways or moments to turn around Mexico and make them turn and chase is where they really run into problems. They don't feel comfortable when the ball, even on the play earlier where it's even just a hopeful long ball and Tesho kind of wins a bad bounce and then lays it off earlier on in the match for a chance. It's like they're just turning them around will cause some problems for them, even if it's to Jossi or maybe Ariola or whoever it might be, Hoppe getting wide. Getting them to have to face their own net, I think, is going to cause problems for Mexico and unbalance them. So I think it's going to be a tough one. Mexico, I think they scare me. They're legit.
So who wins?
My mind is telling me Mexico, but I can't go on the record and pick Mexico in this one. Yeah. Like I can't do it.
Blanco so over here.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if he's watching, but yeah.
Does your conscience?
It's not just that. I will say. I do think you're right to the point where if the longer the match goes on and it's 0-0 or it's 1-1 and it's close, right, and the U.S. is up for the fight, I think that's where it starts to switch, where if it goes bad early. I mean, it was amazing how we dug ourselves out against in the Nations League final, but I don't think that would be a recipe for success. You know, even today, the margins are going to be smaller where Sands makes an uncharacteristic bad pass against Qatar. It might not be a goal against Mexico. That might end up being a goal and one where you're in a deep hole. So I think the longer the game goes on, I could see it starting to switch over to the U.S. And those are good moments where I like the U.S.'s depth and the way Berhalter's been using his substitutions. So that's the path forward I'm charting for the U.S. to come in and get a dramatic late winner.
Charlie, we just got to both go U.S. to just straight extra time jinx this, man.
Voice of reason. Them last now.
We don't got time to filibuster our choices here.
Yeah, the U.S. wins. And
wow,
and Goss touched on
we're
it.
We're going to get canned. We're going to be done. Last show ever.
Mexico is worn out. It is so clear and obvious.
Famous last words.
Edson Alvarez was like getting beasted. He looked like he had nothing left. The tank was empty.
That is a good point, honestly, and what I've been thinking about a ton this week, which is why did we wait essentially a week between like group and knockout, and then 4 days from Sunday to Thursday, and then it's Friday, Saturday is your rest. You're playing a final on Sunday.
Dang.
That's tough.
Yeah, it they just look like they have nothing left. And I do think Matt Turner is going to be tested once again in this match. For the U.S. to win, Matt Turner is going to have to stand on his head like he did today. And that was against a Qatar. That sure. wasn't against Mexico. And everyone could say, hey, U.S. has only scored, given up one goal. Well, if we want to be ultra critical, and I'm going to be ultra critical on this U.S. men's national team because I know the potential they have. You played against Haiti. You played against Martinique. Sure, you played against the Canada, but it wasn't – they were kind of like, we're not going to give it all. Jamaica, really not that strong either, and Qatar. So you shouldn't be giving up all the goals on those teams. Now, Mexico, that's their A team. They didn't have a good game against Canada. You know Tata Martino is going to do everything he can to motivate them, and he shouldn't have to motivate them to play against the U.S., especially losing Nations League, to come out and make a point. So now they will be tested. This was a semifinal. You got to get to a final. Yes, it's going to be hard. But now, show me what you're made of.
All right, this is the game. I'm taking Mexico.
Nice.
Just to prevent the extra time curse.
Go ahead.
You know what? I'm falling on that grenade for all of you. This is my sacrifice for you. Just remember it.
I thought about it. Just remember it.
Yeah. 8:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Sunday. We'll be there for the pregame to talk lineups on Twitter Spaces, and then right here again on the postgame. Let's keep it going, talk MLS here. We will get to the venues that the U.S. Soccer Federation has announced for the USMNT's 7 home qualifiers. Right now we know Canada's Nashville. We know Jamaica's Austin. We know Mexico is Cincinnati, which is a big shock. And reports are that Columbus will get Costa Rica. There will be 3 left. That's El Salvador, Honduras, and Panama. All those in 2022. They said, we're going somewhere with grass. So don't hit us up, Sounders fans. But everybody else, if you want them to come, make your case for your city, all right?
Portland, too.
Hardest. Where should the U.S. team go?
You know Audi Field's getting one. D.C., that just seems
so?
Like...
I don't know. Minnesota, Kansas City, there's some good spots out there. Let us know what you think, 4-1-2-0-6.
You're going to stay Midwest?
Zero MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Just not this Central Time Zone, Charlie.
No.
It's the best non-coast, all right? That's where all the interesting people live.
Hey,
right,
Yankee Stadium has grass.
Yeah. Where were you when the Mark Anthony K trade happened? What was your reaction to this one, Dave?
This is...
Tom Bogert out here. Tommy Scoops. Rapids.
Yeah, big one. Martha,
yeah, for a million in GAM? 2022 international spot? There's some incentives here. It could go to more than a million. He's 26, is Mark Anthony K?
Yeah, this is one of the more exciting trades for me as a neutral. Because MLS is a unique league and teams operate in different ways. And there's like a world in which things can just work out for everyone. And so you look at a team in the Colorado Rapids who aren't going out and acquiring players from outside the league that have made a huge difference for them. But they've been able to identify players that are either in the wrong situation or maybe it's not going to work out the way that a team thinks. Contract issues, whatever it is, that they're able to bring players in that can be effective. And then you look at an LAFC who... have it looks like a center forward that they believe is the last piece and they need some help bringing that player in. So I don't think there's a loser in this trade. And I love Mark Anthony K, and I love the idea that he goes to Colorado and it's his team. And no, he's not, you know, the Vela for them because they operate differently, but he knows that a lot of this is going to be built around him at 26, will be 27. Maybe there's a chance he goes to Europe, and I think that's part of this, is what's the new contract look like if he does sign one with Colorado. But if he stays and Cole Bassett's heading overseas and maybe Kellen Acosta is, this could be his team, and I love the idea of watching the game go through his feet consistently. So I think it's just a win-win on both sides. I think both fan bases should be really excited.
I'm just going to list some names off just so people understand truly what the Rapids have done. And the shift that they have made and the way that they use allocation money, basically like a big transfer fund for interleague trades here. So Keegan Rosenberry, Lalas Abubakar, Austin Trusty, Jonathan Lewis, Diego Rubio, Barrios, Mezquita, Acosta, now Kay. I mean, throughout this entire, I mean, this is like the whole team.
It's the whole team, yeah.
that they went out and did this on. I mean, this is, when you say there are different ways to do it,
they did it with the manager, too.
Yeah, they did.
Good point.
I mean, everyone was like, when is Frazier going to get a head coaching job? And you're like, oh, okay. They're going out and seeing value.
We'll give it to them.
Yeah, they're seeing value in people that are maybe not getting the value or the shine. Now, Kay, I don't think falls into that category, clearly. And, you know, I think he you know, you got a nice penny back for him. What was it, like a million?
Yeah, a mil.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's more of a the similarity is probably more of a Walker Zimmerman with the trade they made. But I think in this case, LAFC feels a little bit better about their center midfield situation with Cifuentes and Kay and Blessing. I'm sorry, Kay's gone. Blessing and Atuesta there.
And they've been playing some wingbacks too, where they just have two central midfielders, really.
Right.
It's been Atuesta and Blessing a lot.
Yeah, so they're saying
Sifu's further up the field. They have Ginella sit in the back. They got the depth.
Yeah, so if you have the depth, then you start looking at, all right, that's can be value. And then you're like, who has the most value here? Where's the interest? And as long as Kay's, you know, sounds like he's okay with this move too. And so, and even if, you know, they don't make, if the Rapids don't make these trades, that also is exciting to, or don't sell players on, that also is exciting to me, because then you start to see Acosta, who we saw this turn, who's having a fantastic season, and then you go add him with Kay, and you put those two together. I think Kay would probably be a little more deep lying. Maybe that frees Acosta up to go forward a little bit more and play a bit more of an attacking role than we're seeing him with the U.S. men's national team. But or they could just alternate. You know, he could play a double pivot, dual six, whatever they want. There's a lot of different options they could do, and then Bassett in front of them as well. So they've got a lot of really good options there. And I think it'd be pretty exciting, but it does sound like there probably is a move in the wings for one of these.
Feels
players.
Like there's a domino that's going to fall here. I'm happiest for Mark Anthony Kay. Get your money, man. Get your money. He was one of the best bargains in the league on performance versus compensation.
So
that was a hangup.
You want to talk about value? Funds. We talk about value all the time. And it's like, look at the Canadian players. We talked about Alistair Johnson coming late in the, or he was being a draft pick, but not like a top draft pick. And then I think Tajon, now we're like, Charlie's like $8 million at the floor.
He's comes out of Syracuse and he's just like, I'm just trying to be a pro here.
Don't forget Brampton too.
$8 million, yeah.
But I mean, like, you go across, Mark Anthony Kay was kind of just, you know, he was scouted at a Canada national team camp, I think, by the goalkeeper coach, Zach Abdel for LAFC, helped bring him to LAFC into the program. So if you go around looking at for young Canadian players, that's definitely some good value. Teams are finding in MLS for a while now.
Charlie, are you a believer in Austin FC now? Sebastian Drewsy's in. He's 25.
Yeah.
Center forward. They're announcing he was an attacking midfielder, but like at River Plate, he mostly played center forward. I know left wing with Zenit, but come on, he's a center forward for them. I don't know why they're saying attacking midfielder. I'm still baffled by that. Like, that's your center forward, guys. Just say it.
Yeah.
You have faith now? He might even make his debut for like two Copa de Tejas games.
Now, when you're saying faith, what do you mean?
I don't know. You tell me. What kind of faith do you have now? What did you have before and what do you have now?
So I think Josh Wolf has done a fantastic job of putting together a team that can compete in the first season. Are they going to be challenging for any trophies? No, they're not. But I do think they're a team that could upset and have some surprise results towards the end of the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get in the playoffs. I would be surprised if they really went on a run to try and win MLS Cup.
I said this about Nashville with Ake Loba. Maybe that one didn't work out as well as this one in terms of this, but also one of the things I was impressed with Austin was they built out that MLS group. You know, their big moves were Pochettino and Cecilio Dominguez, who I don't think have the ceiling of a Carlos Vela or anything like that, but that's talent that you can start to look for that last DP. And Alex Ring, I think, was the biggest acquisition they made coming into the season. But then this is a player who went for $17 million to Zenit, right? So that's a huge transfer number that you're then trying to follow up with. But they kind of gave themselves, and obviously they've struggled the last few weeks, but they gave themselves time to let this work out. And rather than being forced into an early move or being forced into maybe the wrong player, they were able to let the team gel a little bit and be sure what they needed. And now you get to bring that player into an established environment. You bring them into a home game, which they wouldn't have had, and you know how tough it is for players from overseas to settle anyway. So I think they did a lot of this right. And if it hits the way they wanted to, and you know, it's tough for foreign players for it to hit 100% year one. But if he can be that presence at center forward that they need, score a couple of goals, I think a playoff run is a win for them. And they don't even have to make the playoffs. I think just to be competitive as the close of the season. Have games matter. Have fans be excited about it. Have some buzz in the local press. All those things. I think that's a victory for them this year. And I think this is a team now that if Jurici comes in and he's fit and he's ready to play, that they have that capability.
Win games at home. That's the only way they're going to get there. They got to win their home games.
But look at the Seattle game. They played against teenagers. They just couldn't score.
I know.
Everything about that game, they should have won, but they couldn't score.
Do you think they're going to challenge for MLS Cup?
No. I think they could challenge for the playoffs. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a win.
All right. We're all on the same page here.
So we're all picking Mexico? That's what you're saying?
Look, big Friday night in MLS, two games on ESPN, Orlando City, Atlanta United, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's the first time I haven't said Orlando in reference to that rivalry when talking on this show. I had to come back to it. 10, LA Galaxy, Portland Timbers. No Chicharito. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to try to sell you a false bill of sale here. Javier is not going to play in this match. Greg Vanney didn't say it, but he did say it. He's like, it's a little early. I don't think we'll risk him in this one, and that's a good thing. Keep him under wraps. We'll get to a signing that could help replace some of those minutes if Chicharito still has issues. But on this Orlando City Atlanta one, Orlando, we know they're sort of ravaged right now. A lot of injuries, a lot of absences. But I was curious because the narrative used to be, and I'm a big part of this narrative, that Atlanta United and the father, Joseph Martinez, were utterly dominant over Orlando City. So I wanted to go back and see the last time Atlanta won in the regular season. It was August 2019. Frank DeBoer was the honorable manager of the Five Stripes, and James O'Connor was leading the Lions with his safari hats and whatnot. Here is the lineup for Atlanta United in that game, and that'll tell you a lot about what has happened to the club and how much has changed. Joseph Martinez up top, boom. Barco, Pity Martinez behind. Barco's at the Olympics. He won't be available for this one. Pity, of course, sold, gone. Justin Miram, left wing back. Rometty, Nagby in the midfield, all of them gone. Julian Gressel, right back, gone. Florentin Pogba, gone. Miles Robinson, he's there but won't be available. LGP, gone. Brad Guzan, he's in the team but won't be available. So you have one player from that entire 11 who will be available. And the subs, Tito Villalba, Jeff Lerenowitz, and Emerson Heineman, none of them available. So in this match, not even 2 years later, one man, Joseph Martinez, is the lone thread. That's the only thread that extends.
Did you go through the Orlando lineup? Completely changed.
I did. That was a lot different too. But Orlando were bad then, Kalen. So it's a good thing that they're completely different now.
All right. Yeah.
Where does this rivalry stand at this point? And I know this is not a we're all full strength, like, you know, decision day playoff style battle here. Like, what's the state of the rivalry in the South?
I mean, I think Atlanta is playing against themselves in a lot of ways right now. Like, I think that they're in a position where they're not. They'll use the rivalry game maybe as some extra motivation to get up. But I think the real battle has been to try and find their form and try and find their own form, which, you know, I think the last couple games you've seen maybe a little bit of a different style where they're trying to be a little bit more attacking minded. And I think sometimes even when you just get a new coach, a fresh face come in, get some positivity back into the team, because it sounds like things have gotten really bad there. Right. So I don't know how much it'll be about the rivalry so much in this game than just trying to find their own footing and get things back on track.
Shout out to Rob Valentino, who is the interim head coach, my former teammate back in the day, but he was also an Orlando City player.
Hold on. Former teammate, where? Can we make that
which
guessing
we're
game?
Adding,
is this a Westchester Flames teammate?
Yeah.
No.
National team?
Yeah, youth national team.
Okay. Did he play at San Francisco?
Yeah, with Brendan McDonald, BMAC.
Dude, I played against them.
Whoa, we got all the threads coming now. Watch out, Bay Area.
And it goes back to we were playing against each other in club at the Disney tournament where he was playing on the Serena Golden Eagles, and it was Robbie Finley, Brendan McDonald, and him. And, you know, I was playing on the Boston Bolts, and we beat them to win the tournament. But
What is happening right now?
Can I just say that was in Orlando.
Golden Eagles versus the Bolts.
That's like a YMCA matchup
right there. You guys are wearing like burgundy and gold.
Don't disrespect the club the
sorry, AYSO, my bad. Day. YMCA is just a little bit earlier.
Man, but hey, I think he's come into it with, you know, that I think the perspective of, I want this to be fun. Let's get back to enjoying the game, enjoying each other, because it's been dysfunctional for far too long, and he's seen it. He's been what, with two of these coaches where it's just gone completely the other way. And I think for him, it's, let's just get back to having some fun. I'm not trying to make this strict. You know, you hear some of the horror stories that are coming out of Atlanta. They go from
everybody gets best, water, Charlie.
They go from the best
hydration
to
breaks.
Rock bottom.
Galaxy Timbers, 10 p.m. Eastern. Dave, I'll just throw this to you. It's like, what? It is almost 2 a.m. your guys' time, so we're going to finish after this one. Who is going to be more impactful?
I'm chilling.
Oh, yeah, you're good to go. Oh, switch good. It up.
Yeah,
more impactful 2 a.m. of here. These U22 signings. The Timbers signing of Moreno, second forward winger, or the Galaxy reportedly signing Serbia and Eintracht Frankfurt forward Dejan Jovelic.
I think Jovelic.
Yeah, they need another forward.
I think Jovelic, though, because he is a natural second forward alongside Chicha. And when you look at the way Vanny wants to play, you put Cabral and Grancier out wide, they're able to create chances. We've seen how dangerous Chicharito has been. I think he leads the league in XG and goals. So, like, the chances have been there. Now add a second runner in there, a guy pulling other center backs back. If Chicha's making that hard near post run, someone there for the pullback, someone ghosting on the far post. It seems like a natural fit, and it should be exciting for Galaxy fans that maybe also a succession plan in place as Chicharito gets a little bit older, but it seems like it all fits. Now for Portland, I love the idea of bringing in some youth, some energy into that attack to make life a little bit easier for Valeri and a Blanco, or make you less reliant on them. But for the Galaxy, I think this is actually going to be a really good setup for them. And again, this is Greg Vanny's guy, right? Greg Vanny has had a hand in all these signings. He has an idea of how it's all going to fit into the way he wants his team to play, and it's worked so far.
Also, Chicharito is going to be out. Right now, they don't have that succession plan right now. Yeah. Like, it's Ethan Zubak or it's false nine Victor Vasquez, and it's not working. So that's a big signing for them. We'll see how well he does. It's not done yet, though. I think it's reported, but it seems like it's going to be done. Fabrizio Romano is the one reporting it at this point. Let's get the mailbag and get the hell out of here. 401-206-0 MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Give us the best of the best, Dave. What do you got?
Ooh, 2 a.m., you want a good mailbag question? CM here, who says, what does it say about your team, a.k.a. the San Jose Earthquakes, when their best player has been the same guy for over a decade in Shea Salinas, and they've had Giovanni, Giallo, Dawkins, Amgara, and now Andy Rios as their high-paid players? Does anyone want to do a little San Jose love right now, late lane?
The Wando slander will not be stood for, but the Shea Salinas praise will absolutely be appreciated and celebrated. But yeah, it's tough times. I don't know if you guys saw, but San Jose are looking for a new sporting leader to replace Jesse Fiorinelli, and they're looking for someone with MLS experience. But I thought that
is that a new title, sporting leader?
Nah, I don't know what it's going to be. You know, it's like, okay, is it going to be sporting director? Is it going to be technical director? Is it going to be GM? Like, there's all these different titles, and we don't know who it's going to be.
They need a lot of help.
They do need a lot of help. They just need a plan. Like, what do you want to be? You're not going to spend the same amount of money as like Galaxy, Inter Miami, Atlanta United, and honestly, the Portland Timbers. So, what are you going to be? How are you going to be competitive? I don't know that they have that plan. Most of the teams that are down there batting at a different level as far as expenditures have that plan. At least the successful ones do.
I know a good person for that position.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Aguchi Onyewu.
Love it.
You're going to make the case? I mean, I love Gooch. I just thought you were going to.
This is the reason why. Because if you're not going to spend money, you need to have someone who can speak many different languages, who has access to European players who won't cost that much money, and has great connections, which he does. And he's had the experience. He's played in MLS, and he's played in Europe, and he's played on the national team, and he's a young, up-and-coming person who, why wouldn't you give him the chance?
I appreciate that.
Chuck just doesn't want to share the broadcast booth anymore. He's like,
exactly. He's like, Clint Dempsey, looking to Clint. Who else is moving on?
Like, Gooch was taking too much of my airtime last week.
Kate Abdo, if you want to.
I'm down if Gooch goes out and finds some young Berkeley ballers. I can.
Hey, you know, no, seriously. I think everyone's sick of seeing the same names for these same positions, to be honest. So I feel that. It's time for a change. Like, get some new names, some fresh blood into the system.
I'm going to throw Chris Leach out there, who kind of had this position and was the head coach and has moved back up but knows the club. That may be something about San Jose and the ambition side of those things. I think Chris would do a great job. And then Todd Donovan's out there too, and things in Sacramento have changed a little bit. So that's just a couple names in Northern California.
You were going to say. You normally bring up Will Koontz's name every other day. Now the one linked to.
Will Koontz is a pretty obvious one here as well. They keep talking about analytics, so that's something to put around this one. Anything else? We out of here, man.
No, I just would throw my name in there too. Like, I know MLS. I've been around a little.
Empire Goss.
You're close by, right? You're on the West Coast right now.
You might. I just went to Latak in the Mission, baby. I could hang out here. So just give me a call, San Jose.
Just give me a ring.
Empire Goss for sure.
Yeah. It's a little bit different.
East Coast. He's too East Coast, man.
That's what they need. A little more speed, a little more aggression to everything they do. Not this laid back stuff. God.
All right. We're going to call this good. Thank you so much for listening. If you're listening live, if it's on demand, or you're listening to the podcast, same thing. Subscribe, rate, help us out, spread the word. We will be back on Monday and Sunday. Sunday is the reaction to the final. That's coming quickly. It's in like 2 days. It's like 72 hours, and we're right back here to do the same thing. And then Monday, we will wrap up week 16. All the coverage, MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app. Enjoy your night, your day, your morning, whatever it is. We'll see you on Sunday night, everybody.